Hello and welcome to another episode of Scare Traducing, the horror movie podcast for horror movie virgins. I'm Callum McNabb.
I'm Gisela Martinez.
And we are here today to talk about Alex Garland's new film for A24, Men. It is a film that I had mentioned previously that we would be talking about, and I had stressed that please wait until June because it doesn't come out in the UK until June. Well, it's now June, and so obviously here we are.
Yay.
Although it being June, it doesn't look like June outside of the window that I'm looking at right now in Glasgow. It looks like it could be October.
October, yeah.
No thoughts on the weather?
I'm just so disappointed.
Yeah, you're the weather geek in the family. So.
I'm obsessed with the weather. I check the weather like every 2 hours. Like I wake up checking the weather. I mean, I don't look to like through the window. I just check the app. Then I look and then I was like, oh, okay. Like, yes, my day is based on the weather. Which shoes I'm going to wear, like which jacket, if I should go for a run, if I should stay, go to the gym, like... Yeah,
weather. We did have a good 4 days, which coincided with the bank holiday weekend, which was for the Queen's Jubilee, which you have a theory about.
Yes, I do. I'm pretty sure the Queen paid to have
the Queen specifically.
Yes, the Queen. Well, the firm.
Maybe like to be like the mafia.
No, that's how they call. Like the firm is the institution around the Queen. So they paid for this amazing weather that we had.
By using things like chemtrails.
Yes, definitely. Like definitely. Like we have so many bank holidays in the UK so far. All of them have been shit.
Yeah, this year's been shit for weather.
It happens that the one that is to celebrate the Queen... It's amazing.
It's
all
days.
Over the UK. It's just not like, oh, England sometimes has really good weather, sometimes it's in Scotland, sometimes in Ireland. The whole island. Like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
And then suddenly, okay, it's over, and then pouring rain over here. Like, yeah, it didn't rain during the Jubilee, but there you go. That's your amount of rain, like, you didn't have there. Now you're having it. It's crazy. They pay. They pay for that weather.
So you heard it here first. If that comes out in 10, 20 years...
Gisela Martinez from Scare Traducing knew the truth.
That the royals were fucking with the environment.
Yes.
There you go. So since our last episode, there has been a little bit of horror movie news, which we don't normally do on the podcast, but we do talk about horror movies, so it makes sense to... at least acknowledge it, the main one being that Neve Campbell has openly said that she will not be returning for Scream 6, and that this appears to be because of a pay dispute. So Scream 6 is going to move on without Sydney Prescott, and that will mean it's the first movie to do so in the franchise. It's strange to see how people have reacted. Thankfully, most people online seem to have said that, you know, they should pay her what she wants. She's the face of the franchise, blah, blah, blah. And is it a case of women in Hollywood not being valued, which I suppose you could make the argument for? It's disheartening to see some people tweet abuse at the writers and directors of this iteration of Scream, this new films going forward. Because, as we all know, they are not responsible for pay negotiations. That is the studio. So, if Neve isn't coming back, I will be sad. But some of my favourite slashers are the ones that are outliers in their franchises, such as Seed of Chucky. There isn't really a Chucky film like it. It's my favourite. Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. There isn't really a Halloween movie like it. It's my second favourite in the franchise of the 12, so maybe they'll do something different. So it's a bit early in the news cycle. There's reports as to, oh, this is what she was offered, this is what she turned down, and it seems to be a bit gossipy at the moment, so I'm going to say that Scare Traducing as a whole will be staying out of that chat. But yeah, if Neve doesn't come back, sad. If she does, win-win. But we'll both be going to see Scream 6 when it comes out, regardless. What else? Oh, today, yesterday, a new trailer for a new Predator film called Prey, which we just watched. Hazella, you've never seen a Predator film, am I correct in saying that?
I don't think so.
There is Predator, Predator 2, no. Predators,
I mean,
and
I
Predator.
Know the monster figure with the dreadlocks and all that thing.
What were your thoughts on the trailer?
I was confused, like, what's this? And then, because it says by it says producers or director
of 10 Cloverfield
Lane. Yes, yeah. I was like, oh, so it's going to be like aliens in this, when the cowboys, you know, they wanted to, like, Native American take the land. Like, and did they know, obviously, like, oh, that's an interesting take of, like, an alien coming or, like, this figure. Because the only reason I saw is because in the trailer you see this lasers, and I was like, what? First I was like, okay, what's this? It's like, you know, like, Native Americans believe in a lot of, like, folklore and things like that, and nature. So I thought first it's going into that. But then I saw red lasers pointed at the people, and I was like, wait a minute, is this aliens, or what's this? And then at the end, just right at the end, you see Predator. And I said, to you, oh, is that Predator? Yeah, also, it looks interesting.
I think it looks good. I am a fan of the Predator franchise. I don't think it's as good as I used to when I was younger. You can have your sweet.
I'm just going to have one gummy.
When I was younger, I was a big fan, especially of the first one. I've sort of softened on it recently. It's still a very good film. But when I was younger and getting into horror and things like that, I was always that Predator is a cooler monster and a better monster and more fun monster than the Xenomorph from Alien. That opinion has completely switched. I now think the Xenomorph is obviously a better monster. I think Alien is the better franchise. I think the best Alien films are better than the best Predator films. I think the worst Alien films are better than the worst Predator. It's just a franchise that I prefer. Speaking of Alien, it's 10 years since Prometheus came out, which is fucking baffling to me, because I cannot believe it's 10 years since that movie came out.
Because you don't feel that old.
Do I not feel that old? So I will be turning 32 this summer, which means I was turning 22 when Prometheus came out, which means I had only known you for about just over a year, just under 2 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's insane to me. Predator, not Predator, Prometheus doesn't seem that old. So happy birthday to Prometheus. And hopefully we can get the end of Ridley Scott's prequel trilogy, because I love Prometheus. I love Alien Covenant. I know people really dislike those films, but I like how Ridley Scott does not give a fuck. And yeah, I think we should be doing that more than putting Alien on TV, which is what Disney is planning to do with its new Alien series. Basically, I feel like I did when they announced Scream is coming to Netflix or whatever. MTV. It was an MTV series, the Scream TV series, after Scream 4. We're not going to make Scream 5, we're going to make a TV series. And I just remember being like, I'll watch it, but I wish you would make Scream 5. And I ended up getting my wish. So in this case, I'll watch the Alien TV series, but hopefully I get my wish, which is give Ridley Scott the money to make his final prequel film. The only problem is Ridley Scott's an old man and we're running out of time. Let's be honest.
Aww.
Anyway, that is the news section over. Boo. We don't ever do that. Never done it before, and we probably won't ever do it again. We are here to talk about a film.
Yes.
A film called Men.
Men.
So, Men is the third directorial feature from Alex Garland, writer-director Alex Garland, who began as a novelist and then screenwriter.
You know what? When you said, oh, we're going to see this movie is directed by this person, I was like, Is that Thorn? You know,
Thorn?
Not Thorn. The scientist in Thorn.
Oh, Alexander Skarsgård.
Yes, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, he's a director. Garland.
No.
I was like, okay.
No, Alex Garland is definitely not Swedish. He is very, very English.
Oh, okay.
He wrote the novel The Beach, which then was adapted to a film. I believe he actually wrote the screenplay for the film as well, with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the screenplay for 28 Days Later.
Mm-hmm.
The zombie film.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a couple of screenplays. Sunshine, have you ever seen Sunshine? Did a few films with Danny Boyle. Good film. Then he directs, well, people, or there's rumours as to whether or not he directed the film Dread, which is a great film, but
it's why?
He's an uncredited director. Mm. I don't know, it's just, I haven't actually read too much on it, but uncredited at the moment. He's a screenwriter on it. So his official directorial debut is Ex Machina, which
I think
everybody loves, basically. And I think everybody thinks should be the film that Alicia Vikander should have won her Oscar for. She is much better in that film than she is in The Danish Girl. And it's much more iconic. Even without the controversy, people still remember Ex Machina. I think nobody remembers The Danish Girl existing. What the fuck was that? And it's that kind of professionalism that people listen to us for.
I know. I'm eating gummies.
What was that?
It was just a post on Instagram. It's, you know, like a video that comes up. And it's like...
So Ex Machina, I think everybody loves. Then he does Annihilation, which long listeners to this podcast and my long-suffering wife next to me here will know that I am basically obsessed with. I love Annihilation.
Oh god, yeah.
I genuinely, genuinely love that film. I've seen it countless times. The only thing that bothers me about the film is that it did not get a theatrical release here. It came straight to Netflix, and so I had to watch it on the small screen. It's one of those films that I'm hoping maybe in 10 years, 15 years, they do like a, hey, it's 10 years, let's do Annihilation in the cinema. You know, like a re-release or something. Because I want to see that on the big screen. The only thing I remember about seeing it the first time, well, other than loving it, was we were watching it on Netflix. We paused it to go make a cup of tea or something to watch the final half of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I checked my phone. One of my friends had just texted in the group chat, if anyone's wanting to watch that new Netflix film, Annihilation, don't bother. It's a load of shite. And then I text back and was like, I'm halfway through and currently it's one of my favourite films of the year. The back half only solidifies that. I love that movie so, so fucking much. So, when Alex Garland is going to release a new film, I am on board.
Okay.
That's the narrative I'm trying to push. I'm interested. You could say, oh, it's A24. Oh, it's horror. I like all of these things, but I'm like, Alex Garland, I love what he is doing. I even really like the TV show Devs, which some people had an issue with.
I did like that. He was responsible for that. I did like that show.
Yes. So, Alex Garland fan. I mean, do you like Annihilation? Do you hate Annihilation? Do you just wish I would shut up about Annihilation?
No, I did like it. It's just, I didn't think it was like the revelation, you know? Like, you are like, wow, and you keep talking and talking and talking. It was like, oh, Annihilation. Stop it.
So, yes, so, a new film from Alex Garland called Men.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
Mrs. Marlowe, yes?
Harper, yes.
Do, come in. The words
I have to say. It's a beautiful house. But
they're true. Will it just be you staying, or?
Excuse me?
Mrs. Marlowe?
No. Until you give your love,
there's nothing more that we can do. Apple from the garden?
Yeah, it was delicious.
No. Mustn't do that. Forbidden fruit.
Oh, God, sorry, I'm
joking. You're tormented.
Feels more like
haunted.
Yeah. Something happened. husband went upstairs to our balcony and let himself go.
You must wonder why you drove him to it.
Why? I didn't drive him to it.
I think it'd be true. But if you'd given him the chance to apologize, he'd still be alive.
What?
Based on the scores on Rotten Tomatoes, this is his worst reviewed film, both critically and by fans, if you to believe Rotten Tomatoes, which you should always take with a grain of salt, since The Beach, which is the first film he ever worked on. So every film he's worked on since then has been reviewed and thought of higher than this film.
Okay.
Men has not worked from a critical point of view.
Okay, so I can see that.
Certainly not from how his other work has worked. His other work has worked. His other projects have worked.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is about a young woman who goes on a solo vacation to the English countryside following the death of her ex-husband.
Fair enough.
And going into this, before we talk spoilers, before we talk about whether or not people who are maybe thinking of getting into horror and wanting to know, is this a good place to start or whatever, before we do all that, going into this film, what was your feelings, thoughts? You had seen the trailer.
Yeah. I mean, I love Jesse Buckley.
See, this is the thing.
And so I was like, okay, so I'm interesting, whatever it is. A24.
Yeah.
And then the trailer is confusing. So I was like, yes? Like, give it to me.
For some reason, I thought you didn't like Jesse Buckley. I also like Jesse Buckley.
No, I do like him. Why?
I don't know. I just, you know, what we said on our previous episode on Lux Aeterna, sometimes, you know, you said, can you feel the vibe that I'm giving off? I don't know.
Oh, no, I do like her. I think she's a really talented person.
I agree.
In The Lost Daughter.
Yep.
I think that was when I saw, like, wow, like, this girl. Like, that was the... That's when I was like, yes, like, I believe you're a serious actress and you can do whatever you want. You can do, that's what I thought, why are you doing this project? You could be there.
But she always does sort of indie stuff.
No, but I was like, okay, but after The Lost Daughter, I thought, oh, she's going to go into more serious whatever. And I was like, oh, what's this?
Like more prestige-y stuff.
Yes, or more like a, like, I don't know, like, come on, Academy, look at me, or, you know, things like that. And it was like... And you go to this indie horror film? Like, normally you don't get recognized by the Academy for these things. So I thought, okay, well, there's a reason she said yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's A24. And I was like, yeah, give it to me, baby.
I think the reason she said yes is Alex Garland.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, I don't know who he is. You do.
For me, I think I became a Jesse Buckley fan with the horror film, also indie horror, weird Netflix, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, the Alex Kaufman film, which I wrote a review for on the Wii
but
review.
But you saw it in the cowboy thing.
In the cowboy thing?
It's a cowboy movie. The song Glasgow is on it.
Oh, Wild Rose?
Wild
Rose. She's a country singer.
Yes.
Cowboy thing. She's just a musician. Yeah, no, and I thought she was okay in that, like, good. But it wasn't like, oh, she's a grade A star.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the song Glasgow. I think it should have been nominated for an Oscar, but here we are. But I think I'm Thinking of Ending Things is the movie where I was like, wow, because she's toe-to-toe with, like, Toni Collette and Jesse Plemons, for example, in that movie. And I love both of them. And I think I was just like, wow, you're in it. And this movie's weird and you're in it and you're able to sell it and you're able to keep me engaged. Even when it gets super fucking weird. So I was also interested in men.
Yeah.
That sentence sounds weird out of context. So men, the trailer comes out. We're both intrigued.
Yeah.
Both definitely going to see it, which we do. And so therefore, coming out of it, if you were to bump into someone who said, I'm not really into horror films, but I kind of want to know where to start. Is Men on your list of recommendations that you give to them?
Probably no.
Correct. The answer is no.
But I did like a couple of things in the film that I thought was... It is worth to watch at least those things or pay attention. Like, for example, I'm so into... I don't know, probably there's a technical name for this, but when the movie makes me feel that I'm there with, like, oh, they are like in Antarctica and I feel cold, mm-hmm. or like, oh, so wet, he's hungry, and I feel like that, like everything, the sound, the photography
is
makes
that
me feel
case
like that.
Of them being actually on location rather than in a studio, or do you think it's more than that?
Oh, okay, location, definitely.
But it, and that's what you're essentially saying.
Yeah, no,
like
I do.
You can tell it's a real place.
Yeah, like I do like the part of like when she's exploring where she's staying,
the countryside,
like she feeling the rain, mm-hmm. hearing things, and I'm like, oh my god! And even you said like the green is so green in that movie.
That's deliberate though.
Like, yeah, but still, like that makes you feel things. That's intensify the reality. And
but
I'd like,
but it's not reality though.
No,
green is not that green. No, they oversaturate the green.
Exactly, but I think that's a good, because again, this has nothing to do with the podcast or whatever. But
it has everything to do.
What I'm going about to say.
Oh, right, sorry.
So, like for example, you see like fashion shows,
yep.
and you're like, oh my god, that's super stupid. Why are they wearing that? Nobody wears that. But they are not selling that. Like when you see, so you get the attention to actually see, oh, it's only the boots that they're selling. The rest of it is just to you to just get your attention.
Okay.
And a lot of people say like, okay, the makeup is crazy, the thing. And it was like, oh, but it shouldn't take like away your attention. Yes, it's just part of the experience and things like that. That's why it's over exaggerated on all these fashion shows or whatever. So I thought they did exactly that in this. Everything is like up, like really, like wow, this is so green. Oh my god, the sound. Oh my gosh, you can see her enjoying the rain. You can see her like touching the grass, and it feels humid. It feels like cold a little bit, but fresh. I can smell the green,
mm-hmm.
and it, as you say, it's too green. But I think that's so you can see it as a person going to the cinema. You actually can experience that.
Okay,
but they need to intensify that a little bit.
Possibly, I agree. I love the green in this movie.
I think it looks
absolutely glorious. And it's more noticeable in the scenes in the past. The colour scheme's pretty basic. It's green and red. That's the colour scheme of the movie. Like, every major thing happens in somewhere that is green or red. And mm-hmm. she is always wearing green or red. Various shades of. But, the, for example, the sequences set in the past with the husband that she wants to divorce...
Mm-hmm.
They are, like, it's almost like the sun is setting through reddy, orangey curtains. So the whole room is just completely this sort of reddy, orange tinge. Whereas the other scenes of the green in the forest is just a case of you looking at it going, wait, is that tree too green? Or is that how trees normally look? I think you kind of start to doubt yourself a little bit. Which is interesting. But I love it. I think it looks glorious. So, yes, just very briefly before we get into spoilers, I would agree with Izella that this is not a film to recommend to someone if they're not interested in horror. If you're trying to convince someone to come to the cinema, you don't want to go alone, and your friend is like, I'm not really big on horror films, and you're trying to sell them like, oh, well, he's done, you know, maybe sci-fi in the past, or he's done thrillers in the past, it's not quite horror. This one does have elements of horror in it, and I would say it is his weakest effort yet, so don't take them, just go yourself. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
I think this might also be controversial, I don't know. I think this might be signifying the end of the A24 metaphor-based horror. So if you think of things like, I know it's not an A24 film, but like The Babadook, or It Follows, or Hereditary, which is an A24 film, which is like, oh, you can substitute the monster in as a stand-in for grief, or for STDs, or for mental illness, and things like that. You know, these films all have clouded metaphors, which is obviously the joke that you love at the start of Scream 5 with Jenna Ortega on the phone. Jenna Ortega. When she says, like, her favourite horror film is The Babadook, and it's because it's not just slash and gash, it's not just gore and exploitation, it's actually got, quote, meaning about motherhood and depression, etc. Grief, that's the word I'm looking for. So I think that's definitely the era of horror we're in now, especially with most indie horrors anyway. They all want to substitute the monster, the big bad, make sure that it works as an allegory for some human emotion, usually trauma of some kind. I think audiences are slightly getting bored of that. And I think that Men might be the culmination of everything and the end of it. Not to say that you won't get more films like that in the future, but I think we're moving out of this, quote, elevated horror, which is a term I hate, but I think we're moving slowly out of it. And I feel like Men is a perfect example to sort of hear people being like, I'm kind of sick of these movies, which is really, really slow burns and really, really metaphor heavy horror, which is... I even saw the director of Possum, who I can't remember his name right now. He did the TV show Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. I even saw he tweeted out an article about Men and its metaphors, etc. And just was like, I just wish that we would make something truly horrific, regardless of whether or not it's a metaphor for something. But studios feel that this is a way to get gory horror films or terrifying horror films made, is if the audience can sort of treat it like an art piece and say, like, well, actually it means this and it's open to interpretation or whatever, rather than... And so in his opinion, it's sort of holding horror back from being truly scary because it's more intellectual than it is emotional, I think, is his point.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of agree with, especially in regards to this film that we're talking about just now. Again, some of those films are tremendous. The Babadook, I fucking love. Hereditary, I fucking love, and it fucking terrifies me. But I think that maybe, you know, horror always changes. It always changes. It always moves on. I think we might be seeing the end of elevated horror.
Oh. Ooh.
Quote me in 2 years and see if I was right. So, men.
Yes.
Let's get into the film. Mm-hmm. Spoilers from here on out. Jesse Buckley's husband has died. Mm-hmm. She goes to a village by herself to get over this death, which is revealed to have been because she was wanting a divorce.
Yeah.
He says that he's going to kill himself if you divorce me.
Mm-hmm.
She says, you can't do that to me. Which is a pretty reasonable thing to
obviously
say.
Obviously.
And the next thing, he hits her. He hits her, she forces him out of the apartment, and then he falls past the window. We see him falling past the window. Now, she says later on in the film, she thinks he might have been climbing from the neighbour's balcony down to get onto the balcony and fell by mistake. But he did also say he was going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sort of left up in the air as to whether or not his death was an intentional act. And it's that trauma that she is dealing with when she arrives in this village. And there's something very interesting about this village. It's filled only with men. And all men...
are the same
one. Are basically the same. They are all played by Rory Kinnear. So the only characters in this film in the village are Jesse Buckley and Rory Kinnear, who plays the conservative but, you know, slightly doughty homeowner who's mm-hmm. giving her, the bed and breakfast to stay yeah. in, or the house
like
to stay
in. Like an Airbnb or something.
But he's like a little bit too forward, but you know, yeah, is he harmless? We don't really know.
It's just like a person, an old person that lives in a village.
You just kind of want to be like, you know? Shut up and leave me alone. That's kind of what you want to say to him. He plays the police officer who, you know, doesn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. For example, he also plays the Green Man, who is a naked man who sort of wanders around the village. And is he stalking Jesse Buckley? Is he, you know, directly threatening her with his nudity? Like, it's a... that must be a crime.
Yeah.
It must be. It is. Flashing is a crime.
Yeah.
And he's not flashing technically. He's just always nude. But he is arrested. Then he's let go because the police officer... Well, we couldn't really do much.
And the police officer is also the same actor.
Every man is.
But hold on. Did you know this? That everybody was playing...
Yes,
was
in the trailer.
Well, because I just noticed until I see the third man or something.
Yeah, you mentioned it to me in the cinema. You were like, is that the same guy? And I was like, you saw the trailer.
I know, I did, but I didn't notice on the trailer. I don't know. Like, yeah.
So what the film is going for is this idea that in her eyes, because again, we are seeing the film through her eyes, and she doesn't react to these men all being the same. She doesn't say, like, wait, are you brothers? Are you twins? Or whatever. So it can't be a literal thing. You can't take it as...
Don't blame her. I didn't notice until, like, halfway right. through the movie.
You can blame her because it's literally the same man.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't react. Like, it's not something that is commented on.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you have to assume this is not actually existing in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
This is just... an artistic interpretation of the idea that she sees these men as sharing similar traits, whether that be behavioural, in fact it probably is behavioural, and that's what it's trying to show you.
Mm-hmm.
And the easiest way to do that is to make sure everyone's the same, so they share a face, and yes. that's substituting in for
mm-hmm.
her read of and distrust of all men. Now, that could seem like a controversial statement. I know that some people have said that this film is hateful towards men because you wouldn't get a film that does this about women. I disagree. This is a movie about a woman who has suffered from domestic abuse on some level
mm-hmm.
and is therefore distrustful of men as a result.
Yeah, she has a trauma. So.
And so therefore, any man in close vicinity to her, she is wary of. And to make yeah. it clear that she's wary of everyone, regardless of stature, whether it's a priest, a little boy, or a police officer, or a naked man, they're all the same
they're
to her.
The same, yeah.
At this moment in time, at least, she's having a bit of issues with the idea of dealing with men. That, to me, is not a hateful thing. It is not a bigoted thing. It is just the nature of what this story
yeah.
is.
Yeah, obviously, you're talking about this character, and then, I mean, obviously, no, yes, all men are the same. No, I'm just joking. Just
hashtag
saying, this is like a this particular person. This, we're watching the movie of one girl
yeah.
with all these traumas and experiences that made her believe that, yeah, all of them are the same. Doesn't matter, like, doesn't, as you said, what rank or position you are the same.
So, the one question I had leaving the cinema
mm-hmm.
was, why is her husband played by a different actor? Papa Isidu, which I probably butchered that name, but he plays the husband, James. Now, he is a black man. Rory Kinnear is not. He is a white man. So, why... That was my main question coming out of the cinema. Why, if you're having all men the same...
Why not look like a husband?
Why does it not look like a husband? Now, the overriding thing I've seen online, and this makes perfect sense, is because she is of the mind, she is refusing to believe that her husband was like these men, if okay. that makes sense. These are traits that she is seeing in men, but she is not acknowledging that her husband was abusive
like
and was like that. And therefore, she sees them all like this, And that couldn't be James. That wasn't James. That was just a mistake he made one time.
Yeah.
When he punched me in the face.
Yeah.
Which, as soon as someone said that online, I was like, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, but again, she was getting divorced, but for some reason.
We don't know why she was getting divorced.
But she is the one that was starting the divorce.
Correct, so. but I imagine...
Like, she noticed that there was something wrong in the relationship and something wrong with him, so...
But it might not have been an abusive thing. We don't know why she's getting the divorce.
Yeah, fair enough.
But it's when she says that to him, I want a divorce, that his... That we see. We get no backstory in the relationship.
Yeah.
That's all we see. So, it could just be that she's found someone else. Or that she doesn't love him anymore. It could just be basic storytelling, you know, shorthand.
Oh, no. In this movie, nothing's basic. So.
No, but I mean, like... That we don't know what the reason for divorce is. It's not necessarily abuse. Because she's not scared of her husband.
No.
She's the one, you know, going to tell him I'm getting a divorce. She's not with a friend when she tells him. She's alone in the house. She's obviously... And she looks shocked when he hits her.
Mm-hmm.
So this is obviously the first time it's happened. So anyway, yes, that's why Rory Kinnear plays all these men. At least that's the metaphor the film is going for. And strange things begin to happen. As she encounters these men. They are unnaturally forward and aggressive. The priest touches her on the leg when he's consoling her.
Yeah, disgusting. Disgusting!
And, you know, says you must have driven your husband to this. Which is obviously, it's putting the blame on her. There's a wee boy that wants to play hide and seek, and again, the wee boy is played by Rory Kinnear. Well, he's not played by Rory Kinnear, but Rory Kinnear's face is CGI'd onto the wee boy.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to play just a game, a simple game of hide and seek. She says no, and he calls her a bitch. Like, again, just immediately triggering into aggression. This movie drove me mad. It really did.
You know what? It's just like, it has too much details that I don't have time to dig into all the details, you know? Like, this means whatever fertility, and that means power over women, and this means that's a metaphor for this and that and lust, and I don't care. Like, it's too much in one movie.
So
I think.
We're getting slightly back on track because you've reminded me of something else. So the statues she sees in the church.
Yes.
These are recurring images. There's the statue.
It's like kind of pagan. The man.
It's a sort of pagan-y. Yeah. Looks like, anyway, of a man's face with sort of like leaves
like
coming out.
Kind of like the sun. Oh, okay. Like leaves.
It's like leaves,
yeah,
and
leaves,
stuff.
Yeah.
That is a statue that apparently we now call the Green Man.
Oh.
That's what that is called. Okay. Apparently. The other side of the stone is a female holding open her nether regions. And
what?
Her nether regions.
Nether.
Yeah, her private parts.
Oh, never heard that.
And she's holding that open, like an oversized vagina, and she's holding it open. Again, this is apparently quite a popular grotesque from medieval times, and you will find it in churches or whatever. It's called a shilnagig. Is what it's called. Now, both these symbols, from what I've heard Alex Garland say and from what I've read, we don't actually know what they represent. There are theories, but we have no direct way of knowing. And so, immediately, because these images are shown throughout the film, and then you get the Green Man personified by one of Rory Kinnear's characters who ends up putting sticks in his head and whatever, you are starting from a metaphor or image or interpretation basis. That's your starting point for your story.
Uh-huh.
I think that's where the problem for this movie lies. As in, Alex Garland may have something he wants to say, but his starting point is interpreting? I don't know how many T's there are in that word. But he is starting from his read on what these symbols represent. And that read may or may not be shared by the audience, and it's not entirely clear what his read is.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's starting with the metaphor rather than starting with the story, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay.
That's my problem with this film. I love the imagery. I love the substitution when you talk about it represents this or whatever. Fantastic. But that's his starting point. And he hasn't crafted really any emotion around it, in my opinion. To the point where once it gets to the batshit insane third act...
Oh my god.
Because I love the first half of this movie.
I really do love it. I really, really like it too. Like, where is this going?
Yep.
What's going on? Why everybody looks the same? And then she actually mentions, like, what are you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my god. Like, she kind of knows then? Because she's like, what are you? She's like, who are you?
Yeah.
She says, what are you? And I was like, oh my god. Maybe it's like an enchanted village or something. Witches. I don't know. And then it's just...
I like that it's not that simple. Like, yeah, I do like that it's not that simple.
Yeah, but then it goes, like, so random. Like, what the fuck is going on? And then, yeah, I didn't like the end.
But, that's what I mean. Like, I think when he's crafting his sort of narrative purposes, I think he does it excellently. And the film has really tense moments such as the in the tunnel sequence. Excellent. The green man wandering around the house when she's on the phone and she can't quite see him. Really creepy. Just the way people act around her in the village, and when she's alone at night, he really, really sort of gets to grips with the tension of being alone and being the only woman in this place. I think it really, really works. And then you get to the third act when he just absolutely careers into the metaphor and goes fucking not only head first, but body first, head first, feet first, hands first.
Everything.
Just everything. 2 foot into this metaphor, which to the point where I have read various interpretations of what this film means, I agree with Mark Kermode's take, which is actually... there's only one real interpretation as to what this movie's about, and it's not as difficult to read as it thinks it is. Again, it did confound me. I'm not going to try and sit smug here and say, I got it. It did. But once I start reading what people think about the movie, I'm like, I reject that. I don't think that fits. I reject that. I don't think it fits. Then you get to the, oh, it's about a woman who is seeing shared traits of men that she's, you know, she's wary of, that she refuses to believe existed in her husband, even though they did, and the movie is coming to, her coming to grips with the fact that that did exist in her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't exist in all men, but it, in her mind, it certainly exists in these men, and it did exist in her husband. That's the movie. So I think that's the problem, is once it careers into the metaphor, it overcomplicates something which is quite simple. And he tries to do too many things. So if you listen to... I said to you when I came out, my main problem was when the body horror starts.
Mm-hmm.
So the body horror is a sequence of births that happen at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Every male character gives birth to the other male character. So the green man gives birth to... Is it the homeowner? And then the homeowner gives birth to the boy, and the boy gives birth to the priest. I can't remember.
No, first is the green man.
Yeah, and then who's second?
Oh, I don't know.
That's what I mean. But essentially, all male characters birth themselves.
Yeah.
As in, a literal representation of these shared traits are passed along between men.
Mm-hmm.
But as they do that, and as they approach them, and it's really fucking graphic and gory... Jesse Buckley becomes less scared. And the monster, the man, this birthing creature, this sequence, becomes more and more pathetic.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, essentially her slowly coming to terms with, oh, this is just how some people are, and I can avoid these people, and I shouldn't be, you know, I should acknowledge that my husband was maybe like that, and move on and deal with it. Rather than ignore it. And so the movie ends with basically her being the stronger person in the confrontation. Which, as Alex Garland points out himself, usually in horror films, that's not the way. Usually the big final battle at the end the victim or the final girl or whoever is in a David versus Goliath situation, which they normally, not always, some horror films do subvert this, but normally overcome. So you think Jamie Lee Curtis against Michael Myers or whatever, which is she's terrified and she does not have the upper hand. But thanks to her ingenuity and thanks to some outside help and whatever, she gets the upper hand. She wins, right? This movie literally just has her realize, oh, I'm stronger than this thing. I don't have to deal with its bullshit. And so it becomes weaker and weaker as it goes on and more pathetic. And I think I'm not scared watching that. I'm not really invested watching that. There is no horror film that I can think of that works if you see the big thing at the end when the monster confronts the victim is that the monster is actually pretty fucking pathetic and can't really do anything. It's an interesting subversion, but it isn't scary. And I said to you coming out of the film, I think it does not work emotionally at all. If he forgets about emotion, he tries to go for the intellect and he forgets about emotion. And the scares just aren't there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying.
Can you? Yeah. Or are you just ignoring
me? No, I do. I'm not ignoring you.
So, it's an interesting film. I'm very, very glad he made it. Because I like films that do take big swings. And again, I think he himself has acknowledged, look, this might not work. It may not work for some people, it may work for others, whoever. But I had an opportunity to make this. I don't know if I'm going to get that opportunity again. So I made it.
Yeah, that's fine. Take the opportunity.
Exactly. And I love...
And then maybe he's learning from this and then using those techniques in the next project.
We will see. But...
If you don't try, like, what's exactly. the point then? Try to do something different. Maybe you'd come up with something.
I never know. Maybe this film is due a rewatch in like 2 years.
I was about like
no. immediately, no, because I'm just so disappointed with the end. In terms of like I'm so on board, and then the end is just it's artistic metaphorical nonsense, and you're just like ah, you just thought you're being really really clever with this, that, and the next thing. There's interesting stuff there. Like I say, you know, the idea of like, can we make the monster weak and the victim have the upper hand in that final sequence? Can we do that? Can we make a film which is about the act of giving birth? Like, is that body horror? Because how can it be body horror if we are all the product of birth? We are all the product of pregnancies and being born. So how is it that we consider that to be super gross and body horror in the same way that, for example, the film we watched a couple of days ago, The Thing, is body horror with metamorphosis and change and tentacles pointing out of here and wherever. Why do we feel birth as the same way when literally it happens to us all? Interesting ideas, but that's all it is. That's all it is. It's a movie to come out and go, huh, isn't that interesting? But it doesn't get you in the gut. It doesn't get you tensing up saying, wow, you really scared me there, Alex. Which for a horror isn't always necessary. But I think for a horror that's as well made as this, because it is fucking well made. It looks glorious. It sounds glorious. It's his best directed film, because I think Jesse Buckley and Rory Kinnear in here are the two best performances in any of his films. That includes Alicia Vikander in Ex Machina. I think Jesse Buckley is outstanding in this film.
She's amazing. She is amazing.
So I think he's definitely improved in terms of how he directs actors. And he was already starting from an excellent point, but I think he's improved there. The look of the film, fantastic. The sound of the film and the tension he ratchets up in that first hour or so is fantastic. I think he just drops the ball when he decides to go
batshit.
It's a bit going batshit and a bit going, can I make these ideas work? And sadly, I think he can't yet.
I mean, he took the risk.
I'm glad he tried, yeah. So I'm saying it's a decent film. It gets a little bit of an extra boost because it has a male genitalia in it, which if you listen to Contra Zoom podcast, you'll know I always upstar movies if they put a penis in it. Not because I like the sights of penises, but just because they're so fucking rare in movies, whereas boobs and vaginas aren't that rare, that I'm always like, do you know what? Fair play to you, because it should be 50-50. You should see just as many penises as you do vaginas, but you don't. I think that's just a fact of cinema.
No, that's fine. You just want a penis to be happy. Good
so
for you.
I give it a little bit of a boost for that. And I say thank you, Alex Garland, and on to the next one.
Yeah. All I can do is try.
Do you have any final thoughts? Because I feel like you haven't talked in about 50
Calum,
minutes.
You are, again, I don't know if it's this director or what, just like to go on a monologue about this movie.
But you haven't really said much, though.
But no, but what about if we talk about Annihilation?
Annihilation
oh my God.
Is fucking great.
I will just be able to say, hi, I'm Gisela Martinez, and then that will be you.
Annihilation is a film where the metaphor and the emotion, he gets that spot on, that balance.
There you go. See,
I think he absolutely rides that balance well in that film. But also that's because I feel like he's dealing with colder characters, which
okay,
he seems
okay.
to be... I think he finds easier to write. In this one, Jesse Buckley is suffering, and I think he's trying to inject a bit more humanity to this character. And maybe it's not in his wheelhouse. I don't know. But it just didn't... Her performance worked. It doesn't tie together.
Well, my final thoughts about this movie is I think Jesse Buckley is fantastic. She's really, really good, and she's showing it in this movie. I was super confused about the last act of the movie. It was too much. Like, I don't know what's going on anymore. I don't know if it's real. Should I be, like, digging into this? Should I pay attention to details? Like, it's too much of meaningful things around, or, like... things that I need to decode or what, like, am I understanding the movie? It just feels like this, the last part makes the first part like a different movie. If I'm watching the first part, I'm like, okay, I'm enjoying this. I don't know where it's going, but I'm really, really liking the story kind of. Then I get to the last bit and I just feel that the first part is completely like lost. And it's just a different story then, and I don't understand the first part anymore, you know?
Yeah. So you, just before we finish, you said you're not into like, or you felt like you maybe had to decode too much for this film.
Mm-hmm.
Are you not a fan of films doing that in general, or do you think this is just a film that sort of doesn't quite...
No, I just think doesn't understand that. Like, they wanted like, oh, let's put all this... things here that...
I think he's trying too much.
Yes,
I agree with you.
I think it's just, like, too much. Like, for example, Japanese and Korean films are really well known for using colors. Like, you know, like, red represent grief.
Right.
White represent... like, things like that. And they use a lot of these metaphors and things in movies. But it's kind of like... we're used to it, or people that watch this kind of films are used to it, and here's like, oh, I'm gonna try it too, I'm gonna splash
like
this and splash that and put it out. It's like, doesn't feel that natural. I just feel it's on my face that you're putting all these things that I need to, or you want me to decode, you want to confuse me, or you want to be like, oh, look at me, I'm super smart, you know?
So like, for example, it's not a Japanese film, but like The Babadook, you can ignore the metaphor of The Babadook. You can completely ignore it, and the film still works.
Yeah, exactly.
As in, it's a movie about a monster invading a home and terrorizing a mother and a daughter. Mother and son.
In this one, I don't know.
And this one, if you ignore the metaphor or you ignore the
don't know
interpretations,
what's going on.
It doesn't make any sense.
And
it
that
doesn't
takes,
have any story,
and that takes, I think, a lot of points away from the first part.
Yes, I agree.
But yeah, so yeah, that's... I wouldn't watch it again.
You ever? You wouldn't watch it again, ever?
Nah.
Okay.
Like, no need. So, yeah, that's Gisela's final thoughts.
Thank you for that. So, Tell us if you agree, disagree. I'm sure most people have seen it. A24 is obviously the cinema lover's favourite studio or distribution network or whatever the hell it is at the moment. So I'm assuming most people who listen to horror movie podcasts have either seen this film or will be seeing it. So if you have listened to this episode and we haven't spoiled everything already, let us know what you thought. Thank you for listening. Gracias por escucharnos. Y
hasta la próxima.